Have you ever spoken something to someone and they reacted? And you'd had no idea why they reacted. And you ask someone else, what's wrong with them? Sometimes they knew and sometimes they didn't. But I'm sure every one of us have communicated something and it was taken wrong. We miscommunicated some way or another. Whether it's in our own family, and that's probably where most of them occur, isn't it? The little misunderstandings, the little flare-ups. Our attitude seemed to show forth. We miscommunicate. I think, too, with our children. Very sensitive issue. Those of us who have children know the importance of that and how easy it is. And I think that having been through it, at least up to the 23rd year, with my oldest daughter being 23, that it seems to me that the early teenage years are the most sensitive. You can say boo, and they say, why boo? You know, they're off and going. It doesn't matter what happens. You have to take extra care and time to make sure that the pieces fit. I think in the ministry, too, we have to be very sensitive as we're dealing in other people's lives, don't we? To take extra care to make sure we are communicating effectively. I think a prayer issue to ask God to help us communicate more effectively. And if you've never done that, I would challenge you, even at the outset of this particular time, to ask God to give you speech that's always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how to answer every person. Colossians, was that 4:6, I believe. If you've never prayed that into your life, right where you're sitting, why don't you pray that? Ask God to give you speech that's always with grace, seasoned with salt, very tasty and palatable. It's easy to take. It's tasty. Seasoned with salt, that you may know how to answer every person with whom you come in contact. God said, you have not because, why? You ask not. Ask and you shall receive that your joy may be full. So I'm challenging you now to ask, if nothing else from this time, to pray that into your life. And then expect God to do great and mighty things as you open your mouth to speak, to remind you of things that He said in His Word, to prompt you by the power of His Spirit, to put words in your mouth and meditations in your heart. See, there's a lot in the Scriptures that deal with that. So that would be the challenge. Well, how do we plan to do it? Let's look at a few issues. I'm not sure about the ones on the side. I'll read that. The title is Communication is the Communicator. Communication is made possible through the medium of the communicator, the person, the individual. It's the life that counts. A living person. The way to establish communication is through the communicator himself. That's the total you. The German psychologists have a word, Gestalt. It's the sum total. It's the all-togetherness. It's the pieces, how they fit together to become a whole. That's the you. As God has worked in you, your mind, your emotions, your attitudes, your spirit, the communicator himself, or the message and the messenger must become one. You see, if they're contradictory, what will people believe? Will they believe the message or the messenger? I think they'll believe what they see in you, that if you contradict what you say by your life, they'll accept your life. If, on the other hand, They're together, I think you'll find that your communication is much more effective. You'll be saying a thing and you'll be living that same thing. And you'll find that people respond much more positively. When the message is incarnated, is made alive in the messenger, the message is not an idea. It's an event. It's a happening. It's an involvement. So communication is not just saying words. It's a total involvement. I'm afraid too many of us have the idea that communication is basically getting the facts, sir, and nothing but the facts. I believe our computer age has contributed to that. We have an attitude of trying to get just the facts. I had one young man tell me at one time, he said, I'm trying not to show any emotion. I decided that when I was 12 that I would try to communicate without any emotion. Can you believe that? The young man was in his late 20s, about 28 as I recall. It's no wonder he had nothing but one problem after another as he was dealing with people, is it? Because you see, the feeling is much more important than the words in most people's minds. Research has shown that from 40 up to 80% of the impact of communication comes from your nonverbal. It wasn't what you said so much as it was the way that you said it. I told that particular young man that I said, I personally am not nearly so interested in what you say as I am in how you feel about what you say. And most people are more interested in how you feel about what you say rather than just the words. Are you sincere? Are you honest? Do you really mean it? If you say, if you were having dinner at someone's home and the hostess served you a piece of pie for dessert and you ate that, and she said, well, how do you like it? And you said, I like it. I like it. How in the world could she possibly interpret that? There's a young fellow that, well, he's not so young either. He's younger than I am. That makes him young. But he's in his 40s, and over the years, he's picked up a pattern of squelching the nonverbal, of squelching the little emotional overtone that adds feeling to the communication. And I was in a group meeting one day, and I brought up a subject, and I asked him, I said, do you like that or not? He said, I like it. And I said, now, no more conversation. Everyone in the room heard that on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 meaning he doesn't like it very much, just ever so slightly, and 10 means he really is sold out to it. Determine a number. The group varied from 2 to 8, but most of it was 2 to 5. Most people felt he didn't really like it. And the man who rated him 8, I said, why did you rate him 8? He said, well, I know this fellow. I've known him for years. I know how he communicates. And I turned to the guy and I said, now you're the only one in the room who knows the real answer. What is it? And he said, 7. I said, did it startle you that most people thought it was down around 2, 3, or 4? That they really couldn't tell whether you liked it or not. Could not tell how you felt about it. You see, when you communicate Jesus Christ, do people round about you know that you really love Him? That He's intensely involved in your life? That you surrendered to Him? That He's in control? Is it an excitement for you? Can they tell? Listen, I don't know about that guy, but one thing I can tell you, he's excited about Jesus. Will they say that about you? You see, in evangelism, if you really don't believe it, or suppose you believe it a lot, but it communicates that it's a 2 on your scale of 1 to 10, you see, how are people going to respond to you? I think that we're saying it's the person himself, the sum total. Are you communicating the truth? To get just a little bit of a feel, we're not going to have time to go into this in great detail, but just to give us an overview idea of some key ideas involved or key issues involved in the communication process. We have a smiley over here we call the sender. Now, that little light bulb is not just ideas. That's ideas and feelings. Ideas and feelings. And over here we have a receiver. The objective being to get some ideas and feelings from the sender to the receiver in such a way that the response will be the one you're desiring. Stated differently, we might say the objective here, we have some purpose in communicating, a thing we want to achieve. We might call it our goal. The action will be the use, basically, of this process. And the reaction is what you hope will happen on the part of the receiver. When they've heard what you say and how you said it, that they'll respond in ways that you're choosing. Or you may just be wanting to know their response by asking a question. But at least you have some reaction you expect. Now, in order for that to happen, we have to get the message. This message has to go through 2 sets of personal barriers, one for the sender and one for the receiver, obviously. The message itself, we'll look at these in a little more detail. We have a set of physical barriers to go through, and it has to ride on some channel in order to be communicated. And we'll see at least 5 channels, being primarily our senses. It has to go ride on one or more of our senses. And we also, at the same time you're sending, there's a feedback circuit. That's not showing up very clearly, but there's in the orange shading there, that at the same time you're sending, the receiver is also giving feedback. Nod of the head, a little mm-hmm, a frown on the face, may drop off to sleep. You never know what's going to happen. Do you appreciate seeing a pro in action about this drop off to sleep? Years ago, I was a lecturer in Air University, and we that were on the faculty used to try to avoid the 1 p.m. lecture period. Have you ever tried to sit through a 1 o'clock lecture? And you know how tough it is, no matter what you want to do. Had you ever thought in behalf of the fellow who's up there trying to make that go? I used to watch real pros in action. And we'd have about 150 to 200 in the class. And by the time the lights would go out, or the dim for something like this, some fellow would do it by the numbers. He'd watch you walk over the light switch, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. I mean, some of the most instant reactors I'd ever seen. Then there's a guy who would sit there and lock his muscles and sound asleep. You couldn't push him out of the seat. That's a real pro. Very briefly, you may not be able to get all these down. If we had a couple of hours, we could go over these in detail. But the personal barriers are the things in our lives that tend to restrict our communication, that tend to work against us, that cause us difficulty. For example, trying to match up the left-hand barrier with the right-hand barrier. The sender has a set of communication skills, as does the receiver. Now, who should you focus on if you're going to be effective as a sender? You have to focus on the receivers. But honestly, now, whose in fact do you focus on? Primarily on your own, if you're like most people. Most of us tend to respond to our own thing rather than taking the time to find out what the communication skill is for the person on the other side. Find out their vocabulary, their background, the things that they're involved in. Finding their value system, for example. Now, it doesn't mean you have to destroy your value system, but so many people in evangelism will go out with a Christian set of values and denounce the non-Christian. Will attack their values rather than focusing on the truths about who Jesus is and how to get him into the life. You see, when you attack someone's values, they feel almost obliged to defend them, don't they? I think what we do is start arguments more than anything else by using that approach. And the Lord told us his servant, the Lord must not strive, must not be an argumenter, an arguer. We've to come in love and sensitivity. Now, we don't have to agree with their values, but I think the objective is to be very careful how you attack their values. I think rather go to the source on how values are created rather than attack the values. See, if you can get Jesus presented through the Word in the power of the Spirit, then faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word, doesn't it? It's what the Bible teaches in Romans 10:17. Knowledge and experience go hand in glove. Many of us try to communicate on our background and experience. Now, the individual who introduced me, we could probably have some conversations about the old days when we were both in the Air Force and would use terminology that would communicate to both of us. But if we were going to communicate to a group who didn't have that experience, then I should probably change my speech pattern, shouldn't I? I should use a different set of examples because it would be difficult for other people to understand. I could tell you, for example, I had an experience the other day in an automobile on a road that I was not accustomed to, and I came up to a curve, and I started to make that curve, and it gave me a sensation as if I were in a slip in an airplane. Now, do you understand that? How many people would really understand that? Well, there are more of you than I thought. That's probably 7 or 8%. Now, suppose that I turned it around and said, used a different example, that said, as I started into that curve, the engineer had not properly banked the curve. You know the kind that's a flat curve? And if you go into it, even just a 5 miles an hour over the little sign, they say that this curve is limited to 35 miles an hour. If you go into it at 40, your car tends to throw you over to the side, doesn't it? Just as you start into it. As contrast to that, if it's properly banked, you hardly feel it. You can take it at high speed. That's a better example, isn't it? So many of us focus on our background and experience rather than the people to whom we're communicating. And I think, again, in evangelism and also in fellowship, as we touch base with people and meet them, that we need to focus on their background and experience. Now, how in the world will you find that out? What have you found? Any of you found a good technique to find out their background and experience, their communicative skills? I think ask questions. Give them an opportunity to talk. Find out what their interests are. And as you listen, you should be able to pick up some clues as you go along. And then if you don't, ask some more questions. Don't ask them now, describe your communication level. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying get them into circumstances that would allow them to communicate to you. And you be a very sensitive receiver. Ask the Lord to give you the ability to recognize their background experience, their communication level, so you can communicate on their terms. Put the focus over here. Of course, attitudes, very, very important, aren't they? Whose attitudes may be the most significant? I would suggest both are important, but probably your attitude, if you're going to initiate it, if you're showing anger or displeasure, if you're showing fear, if whatever, agitation, even the unfriendliness can communicate, can't it? Are you basically a friendly person? I had a fellow one time tell me he thought he was basically friendly, and people kept thinking he was unfriendly. He couldn't understand it. You may not conceive him back there, but he used to wear a frown all the time. And he didn't understand why people thought he was unfriendly. I had an opportunity to have him recorded on a videotape in a little presentation he was making, and we didn't get started good before I hit the hold button, and there it is, a zoom up, and there's a heavy lines all the way across. And I told him I knew he was friendly, but he isn't communicating friendliness. And he looked at that, he said, "Do I look like that?" I said, "Man, that's you." And he said, "What in the world am I going to do about it?" And I said, "Well, try smiling." So he did. He went... And I said, "No, that's really not exactly what I had in mind." Show forth friendliness. See, a man that hath friends must do what? Must show himself friendly. The Bible says that. Are you friendly in your personal contacts with people? Suppose someone looks a little agitated. Does that get you a little agitated too? When they sort of react to what you said, do you want to react? I used to do that. You could count on it in years gone by. Fella get sort of angry with me, I got angry back. He'd shout and I'd shout. Of course, you know what ended up? Arguments. I used to love them. I'd go out and start them. And I'd run some of these out. I knew where they led intellectually. I had the support data and everything. I'd go out and start them, and I knew just the guys I could do it with. Just turn his switch and off he's going. Then the Lord gave me that verse in Timothy, 2 Timothy 2, the 23 and 4 passage in there, where the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men. See, is that a characteristic in your life? I meditated on that, and I was thinking about it. And I went into my office one day, and a young fella came up that loved to argue every bit as much as I did. He came and inserted the barb, flipped my switch, and I wasn't off and running. First time he'd ever seen that. He sort of backed up and looked at me like, "What's wrong?" I said, "I sense you want me to argue with you today." Now, how are you going to argue with a fella looks like that? He said, I said, "You did, didn't you?" And he said, "Yeah, I guess I did." I said, "Well, let me assure you, you can't argue with me today. It takes two, and you can't count on me for the other one." And then I told him what the Bible said. And through much prayer, and I still lose a victory every now and then, but the Lord in His grace is helping me with that. I'm overcoming it. My attitude is different, not one of being argumentative, but one of being friendly. You know, a soft answer does what? For who? Basically anybody who will use it. I shared that with a non-believer one day, and lo and behold, a soft answer does turn away wrath. Almost around the world, doesn't it? Yeah, if your enemy be hungry, what do you do? Give him bread to eat. And if he's thirsty, give him water to drink. And then what'll happen? You'll heap coals of fire on his head. Now, they don't do it for that motivation. You just know that that's what'll happen. I think we do have to be aware of these other things. See, the physical senses, physical condition. Is a person receiving you? I walked at the University of Tennessee some years ago, and there were two men standing in the foyer of the education building, and they were having two-hand conversation. And I went through my mind, they may both be deaf. One of them may be deaf, and the other one can hear. It might be they're both students practicing, because we had a very excellent deaf ed department. And I walked by the two fellas, and they looked up. And years ago in the Boy Scouts, I learned a fingerspell. And I could still remember how. I just said, "Hi." Of course, one guy's face really brightened up. You know, he said, "Hi," back. And the other fella said, "Do you communicate with the deaf?" Of course, I had that figured out then, which was... And I became fast friends with the deaf man, and we were both in the same program, essentially. And over the time I was there, I was privileged to be an interpreter for him in three different courses. We became fast friends. And one day I wanted to share the gospel with him, but I wanted plenty of time to make sure that he knew that I loved him. And I started off by telling him, he could lip read a little bit, but I told him basically that I love you. And he could speak, but he wasn't willing to do it with very many people. You know the nasal sound that deaf people make. He said, I know that. I said, how? He said, the first time I touched you to get your attention, you did not back away from me. He said, everybody backs away from me when I touch them. That really went down to the depths of my soul. I wasn't even aware that I had not. I cared for the man. And it was by God's grace and God's working in a life, because a physical response will tell you to back up, but your spiritual response will just hold you in there fast. I never even thought of it. But it touched his heart, the fact that I never backed up when he touched my arm. More than that, we were buddies. I had my hand on his shoulder. He had his hand on my shoulder. You know, I was writing notes. I was his interpreter. Then I proceeded to tell him about Christ. He said he believed the truth and that he really had prayed to receive Christ into his life. That he had a spiritual awareness of the fact that I loved him in addition to the physical thing. And he'd observed that by some things in the life. But it was an attitude, basically, that got through to him. He had a physical problem. And if we aren't careful and try to communicate on our base, we'll miss the people who have the physical problems, won't we? We'll physically withdraw from them to the extent that we become offensive. Of course, semantics and verbalisms, the words don't always communicate the same thing. For example, I'm about to call a word and you tell me what color it is, all right? Apple. No greens? Didn't someone think of green? Who thought of green apple? Yes, I was sure we had some green apples in there. Now, I like those green ones. You're really thinking about those yellow delicious, weren't you? You weren't thinking about those little old naughty green things that's a sour. I knew you weren't. You were thinking about those beautiful, delicious, those golden delicious when they just come out there green. If I asked car, you would think of a make. See, you perceive it differently because you have a different viewpoint of it. The words don't mean the same thing to all of us. Where I'm from, we have a little phrase, and you can tell I'm from Maine by now, can't you? I'm from the main part of Florida. But we have a little saying down there. It's reckon is the word. I reckon. But goodness, it has a lot of different meanings. If the wife were to ask her husband about, is he going to come home that evening? He's going to go fishing, but will he be back for supper? So he might say, I reckon. He said, I reckon. I reckon. And that means so totally different things. When he says, I reckon, it means he's going to count on it. Even if he's catching fish, he's going to come home. She'd rarely get that down in Florida. He'd probably tell her no, just look for him when he gets there. Or he might have a loud outboard motor like a friend of mine did. It was so loud she could hear him when he started the thing up to come home. But the communication will be different, won't it? Depending on what it means to you. You have to find out, is it meaning the same thing to the other person? Their total background, their communication skill, their knowledge, all the things that go into their life. Of course, their interest. We need to focus on their interest. I think to be effective in evangelism, that's one of the keys, to capitalize on their interest. Find out what they like. Win a hearing by focusing on their interests. If you don't get a hearing for you, what do you think you'll get for the gospel? Very little. If you come on offensive or not responsive to them, they probably will turn it off. But on the other hand, if you can get a hearing for you, and you can share things that they are interested in, and they accept you, then I think they're more willing to accept what you have to say. I had talked to over 100 people before I found one who didn't want to hear anything about anything spiritual. Can you believe that? Over 100 people before I'd found one who said, I don't want to hear it. And I had a good rapport, best I could tell, going with him until I introduced the spiritual matter. So I backed off and we went back to his subject interest, and we got reestablished our relationship. So I came around the back door this time. He said, I told you I didn't want to hear that. I said, would you mind telling me why? He said, oh, I'd love to tell you why. And he went on to relate a story how years ago he'd had a girlfriend that in order to date her, he had to go with her to church. And everywhere he went, they were pounding him on the head. And mama and daddy and aunts and uncles and cousins, everybody trying to get him to become a Christian. And apparently the message was not that clear. What they were trying to get him to do is walk down front in a certain church service. That was the whole process. If you just walk down front, you get saved. That was the thing they were trying to get across to him. And he followed her because he cared for her. But it was all the time was building up inside of him. And one evening, in an evening service in that church, they had an altar call, and one of the people behind him tried to give him a little shove and whispered in his ear, said, "Now, calm down." Pow! He blew his lid. He had it with her and Mom and Daddy and the whole crew, including the Lord Jesus Christ. And I couldn't help but think of Proverbs 18:19. A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. And their contentions are like the bars of a castle. And if you ever come face to face with one fellow who's been thoroughly offended, it'll sure grab your heart. And then you'll probably stop and pray something to the effect. You may want to pray it along with me. Lord, please never ever allow me to offend a brother in this manner or sister. Never allow me to offend anyone in this way. Now, if the gospel cuts and offends, well, that's the nature of the word. But I'm talking about you. See, your communication, what do you communicate? Well, what you say and do certainly communicates a lot. And people around about you are responding to that, both in fellowship and in evangelism. It's very essential, your communication pattern. Of course, emotions are very important. If someone is highly emotional, you probably are not going to get through until that bleeds down a little bit and subsides. A professor was teaching a course in observation at a university some years ago, and near the end of the course, he had been very careful and meticulous in his presentations, and they had the details in how to observe and how to record what they'd observed. So near the end of the course, he's lecturing away, and in the back door, the door slammed against the wall, and everybody turned around. There's a man standing there with a pistol. He took 5 or 6 paces right straight toward the professor and looked at him and said, "I told you the last time I saw you that if I ever caught you around my wife one more time, you were going to pay for it." Blam! Ugh! Thud! People screamed. The guy ran out, and some ran up front to see how bad he was. And, of course, he got up then and brushed the ketchup off after they had been sufficiently stimulated. And he said, "Record what you observed." So he gave them a little time. It was really basically the final exam in the course. Some didn't do too well. Would you believe the number of shots varied from 1 to 3? And one joker had him being stabbed. We have some lawyers in the room, don't we? Is there somebody, a lawyer here someplace? I'm not going to embarrass you. I just want to verify. Yes, sir, we have at least a couple. Those of you who've ever tried to interrogate witnesses, is this thing real? If there was emotion, do they ever get the right story? Rarely do they. If you got 5 people seeing it, there are 5 different stories, and one of your tasks is to try to filter out which one is true and put that together, because emotions will detract from your communication. So you need to be aware of it. Of course, address needs. Be sensitive to the social cultural norms of wherever you are. There are certain little patterns that are offensive in different parts of the country. Certain phrases, certain reactions and responses. I was recently in West Africa in Nigeria back last November and December. And I'd met some Nigerians, and they started to drive away, and they said, "Bye-bye." And I said, they said, "Bye-bye." And I said, "Bye." And a friend came up and said, "I really suggest you do it like this and not like that." I said, "Well, the only thing I could see different was that you used your right hand." He said, "That's the idea, that your left hand is negative. It's just a bit offensive. And the further north you go, the more offensive it is. You wouldn't dare touch anyone from Kano North with your left hand. Never, ever. It's totally offensive." See, I didn't know that. But once I knew it, boy, from then on, it's this way, you know. We're going to take care of that. Well, all you have to do... Especially, they were a pretty fierce-looking crew, you know. They stand around there when I got off that plane. They had submachine guns with live ammunition. And I learned years ago as an old military man, you have to be real cautious about that. You know, some fella gets a live round into the weapon, you don't know what's going to happen. And I know where I was, so I'd like to do it this way. Well, I think you can see there are definitely personal barriers. There are also some physical barriers. The light, and we've had to adjust the lights once. I'm fixing to snap my fingers now. At that moment, how many of you were consciously aware that the blower fan was on? Well, I'm startled. You've overcome it. First group ever. How many of you at some time or another have been aware that that blower fan's been going? Now, I know we're going to get some out of that. So it can be a distractor. It doesn't have to be. If it's too bright, those of you who are looking back from over here, for example, I suspect this young lady that the brightness over there is a little bit distracting at times. You notice I'm not giving you that reflection now. They get that over here. Fella said, Bill, looks like you're letting your hair grow out. All the way out. If you were putting that in your running a critique on it, that's under the heading of diversion. A fellow lived in my home, wrote me the other day, and he said, Bill, I heard the funniest story will make your hair fall out. He said, oh, I see you've already heard it. And for you critiquers, that's how to milk a diversion. Well, let's go on. Anyway, see, I have to believe that God loves me anyhow, or I'd quit, wouldn't I? I'd quit for over so many things, would you? If you lose that truth, that God loves you anyhow, you want to quit. You get depressed. You put yourself on a performance base. You'll even cut back in your communication. You'll find out you're not even trying to relate in fellowship, not honestly. And you'll never, never, never give the gospel, will you? See, that's why I want to start with that central truth to me, that Jesus is where it is. It's not in methodology. It's in your relationship to Him. Do you know Him well? How well do you know Jesus? And then are you trusting Him and believing what He said? Then the communication thing will make a lot more sense. Well, we have a message, and that message, we said, is ideas and feelings. Not just what you say, but how do you feel about what you say? We talked about that. And then we have the channel. The channel is one or more of our senses. And, of course, the verbal one there would be through our ears. Even words written will become nonverbal until you verbalize them. Because some people remember based upon what they saw. They'll write a word down and remember the word as a visual recall. And most of our recall is visual. Studies have shown that. So we're talking about verbal and nonverbal. Let's talk a little bit now about perception. If you perceive a thing, it looks a certain way to you, and it may not look that same way to me. We might have a variety of things going on. For example, I could give you a little test, a multiple choice test, and let me do that. Now, there are five items on this little statement, and they're numbered 1 through 5, and the question says, which one does not belong? So you just select the negative one. Which one of those does not belong? The what? The yo-yo. How many think the yo-yo? That's pretty much all of you. How many think something else? That's electric yo-yo. If the room were darkened, you could see that does in fact light up. Now who needs the white flag? See, and obviously, if I'm focusing on my thing, I'm right, and all of you are wrong, huh? No, you realize that's a trick question. When I saw that thing, have you ever seen an electric yo-yo before? I never had. I saw one. I said, I'd like one of those, not just to play with it every now and then, but it would make a point because I never had seen one, and I figured most of you never had either. So, to look back, my perception-based thinking of an electric yo-yo meant that every one of you were wrong. Is that correct? No, it meant that I was wrong. I need to look at it on your perspective. If all of you felt that way except one, if I'm going to communicate with that one, I have to focus on the perception for that one. How does it look to you? See, it's important. Very important. Let me give you another little test on that. How you perceive it counts. Where we have personal barriers, if we were to put the word perception above the personal barriers, that's when they work for you. When they're blocking your communication, they're barriers. But when they work for you, they give you a perception base that allows you to understand it, to see it more like others see it. Because we don't all see things alike. So perception would be another very important term. I'm going to give you a little test. And what I want you to do is to count the number of times the letter F, A, B, C, D, E, F, the number of times the letter F appears in this sentence. Two constraints. One time through only. And secondly, as quickly as you can. So one time through as quickly as you can. And when you finish, I'm going to stand over here and you look at over toward me and not anymore at that because it's one time through. You ready? Number of times the letter F appears.
Someone should be through. Someone is through. Several are through. Quite a few are through. A third are through. Roughly half are through. Three quarters. Nearly everybody's through. Some of you on the side are having difficulty seeing it. And I think for the sake of demonstration, I need to cut it off. Now, there were really two, weren't there? How many of you found two? There were two. There are three, though. How many of you found three? Right. Now, there are honestly four. Did you find four? There are five in there. Did you find five? There's six. Did you find six? How about that? You didn't understand the instructions. Is that what it was? There really are six. Let's hear it all again now. Oh. There really are six. Those of you who found two, it's very evident that effective has two F's, right? And those of you who had three, that life has an F in it. But for I cannot rationalize four and five because the ofs all have an F in it. If you got one of, you should have logically. Oh, now everybody. Oh. Why?
I still don't see the sixth one. Where's the sixth?
There are three ofs. There are three ofs. That's all right. I couldn't see him either. So you're not alone. In fact, did you notice that nearly all of us were in that condition? How many of you honestly found six? Let's just see. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There weren't but nine who found six. I found all six. So you're in a good crew. The super guys who were had trained to look for details maybe. Something in your background allowed you to perceive it differently. Why didn't all of us perceive those offs? Most of us missed the offs. Well, right over them. Why? They're so small, you've been trained to ignore the insignificant, haven't you? I just can't understand that. I haven't prayed over that, but I just haven't been able to understand it. But you see the idea. What does it look like to you? The ofs looked unimportant, so you skipped them. And you could have, in fact, gotten the meaning very clearly without the ofs, couldn't you? You could have extracted the ofs and had all the meaning, and we've been trained to do that. That's a perception base that's been instilled in you. And there are some people who have trained themselves or because of their job maybe have had to be very meticulous with details. For some reason or other, their background says, I will count the offs. I will look. Some people did this based on the phonetics. Were there any phonetically oriented people who read the sentence phonetically? There's usually one or two in a group, and there were several. Then the of has a v, doesn't have a f, effective life. If you were looking for the F sound, you wouldn't get it in of, especially if you're from Maine like I am. That the of, it comes out more like an of. You sort of swallow the end of it. You wouldn't get the phonetics from it at all. So what are you going to do? Well, let's look at a few things that might help. One thing is to visualize as much as you can. Some sources of learning from 83% of what you've learned, basically, according to some recent studies. About 83% came through your eyes, not your ears. About 11% through your ears. 3.5% through smell. 1.5% through touch and about 1% through taste. So I think it's significant if you tie the show and tell. Elementary teachers learned that years ago. Show and tell. That's where it is. Let's move up a little bit and see what the significance is on retention. You notice that the first column is audio only. The recall after 3 hours is 70%. Sounds pretty good. But look after 3 days, only 10%. It's gone into oblivion. The visual only, you only get 72% after 3 hours. Doesn't look significant, does it? But look at the recall after 3 days. It's double. But look what happens if you have show and tell. You can remember 85%, and then a number there that's blocked out for you is 65. 65% recall after 3 days, as opposed to 10% from hearing. So I noticed very carefully when Jesus shared his parables and illustrations that in most cases it was a life situation, that parables were related to something they could see and understand and could observe in his life. And I think if we want to be effective in our communication, it should be, we should back up what we say with how we live and demonstrate the things we're trying to communicate if possible. Sometimes we rely too much. That's the wrong one. Sometimes we rely too much on words. That's all we do. But the words may not be communicating. I don't know if you can see that or not. Spot is a dog, run, Spot, run. The little guy's going to recite now. And he says, personally, I think the author's style is redundant, repetitive, and lacking in narrative skill. But you don't know what he's thinking, do you? See, sometimes you make a real clear communication, and you think we're really getting through. Wow, getting a relationship established now. That's not grounds for marriage, but... But see, you're not always sure. One thinks about loving fish means to eat them, and the other, that'd be cannibalistic to eat a fish. They raise them. So it was miscommunication. Here's one I copied out of the dictionary, Webster's Collegiate. This is a noun. It's a polyhedron having for its base a polygon and for faces triangles with a common vertex. Now everybody knows instantly what that is. Raise your hand. Several of you will. Now, look at it a little longer. Polyhedron is a multi-sided three-dimensional figure. That helped, didn't it? Not a whole lot. Base a polygon. That's a two-sided, two-dimensional multi-sided figure. But if I put that on there, does that help? What is it? One guy said it looked like a palm tree to him. Jim, that was Skip Gray that did that. Let's go back to our original concept that told us that we have to have nonverbal communication. We talked over here. Verbal and nonverbal. And I think nonverbal is so important that we do need to spend a few minutes on it. I would propose to come down a ways amongst you. And I would like to do one thing, and that is change the set of my jaw just ever so slightly. I'm going to try not to have any expression. I'm going to lower it about 10 to 15 degrees. You get that? Wasn't very much, was it? Now, those of you, tell me what it makes you feel about me. As I'm talking to you with my jaw. Just tell me. This one? Okay, bullheads. Name something else. You may not have seen it. Stern.
Aloof.
Authoritarian. Authoritarian. Just tell me. Okay, whatever that means. Sorry about that. I just broke the nose there. Would you believe that nearly every one of those are personal characteristics you are attributing to me? That is part of my character. I'm stern, I'm authoritative, I'm threatening, I'm causing you to be fearful, I'm causing you to react. Those are personal characteristics, and all I did was lower my jaw 10 to 15 degrees. Now let's try making it up, move it up about the same amount. Okay, now tell me how you feel. What do you feel about me? Holly. Speak out. Stuck out. Proud. Pompous. Professorial. Do you get the point? Just the nonverbal setting of my face. Now suppose I contradict what I say with my nonverbal. Which will you believe? What I say or what you see? Some of you wants to share that. Let me demonstrate. This is the saddest day of my life. Or here's one you get regularly. Happy? Of course I'm happy. Whatever made you think I'm not happy? What's the matter with you? Don't you know that I'm happy? You see the point? If your nonverbal contradicts your verbal, I believe what you do and not what you say. It's not so much what you say as it is the way that you say it. If someone, you're talking about Jesus, see, does that ring a warm spot in your heart? Just the name Jesus, that there is no other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. Does that really strike a chord for you personally? Does the concept of giving the gospel stir your heart? Do you look for opportunities? How do you respond? What do you communicate about Jesus? What about your other relationships? Do you communicate that you really care? See, I remember a guy told me some years ago when I went out in evangelism with some of the gang, and I found this fella. And he was from way out, let me tell you. He'd been on the drug scene. He had marched around the world basically doing all these weird things that I don't really understand. But I accepted him. And I kept praying, Lord, how am I going to lead into spiritual things? And no. Finally, after about 40 minutes, I got over into it. And I just asked him, I said, look, I really came out trying to find somebody I could talk to just to tell them about Jesus Christ, who he is, and how you go about getting him into your life. Would you give me the privilege of doing that with you? And he said, okay. I shared the gospel. We interacted much of the way through. He did not pray to receive Christ, but he heard the truth, and I reviewed it with him. He did understand. That's all my job was anyway. See, God's job to bring him in. He said, you might be interested to know that I'd made up my mind a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't changed it, that the next guy that comes to me and says, are you saved? And I'm going to pow! No word explained. I'm just going to pow him. And he's big enough to do it. I felt like backing up just a little bit. I said, why didn't you? I didn't feel any animosity toward me. And yet I did that. I didn't ask you, are you saved? But I went over the issues. He said, yeah, but you didn't do it the same way. And I sat down then. I said, well, tell me. I want to be a learner. You explain to me what was about it that allowed you to be more receptive. Of course, the big thing was prayer. He didn't understand that. But we had prayed diligently. And that was the Holy Spirit doing the work. But the outward signs to him, what did it look like to him? Why he wasn't angry. Not only was he not angry, he was drawn toward me. I saw him again later, and he gave me some days later, and he gave me a very friendly response when we spoke. And I think that that's the basis behind one of the things I'm talking about. I just mentioned another key issue, and that is the space that you have between people. American males of about the same height normally will stand about an arm's length and 4 to 6 inches apart. If we had more time, I'd demonstrate it. It happens nearly every time that I'll ask a guy to stand here, and I'll just walk toward him, looking at me, till I get right up to him. I say, now you tell me to stop when I'm at the right distance, and he'll say, stop. And invariably, the furthest off it's ever been has been 2 inches. But if you violate that space envelope and get too close, people don't hear. You notice I said American males. It's not that consistent with women. Some women will not only tolerate it, they like a little closer space envelopes. With other women, sometimes they like it with men. And to be safe, I'll stop when I'm introduced to a lady. I frequently, if I'm coming up, will stop just outside the space envelope. And if she extends her hand, I'll lean forward and shake her hand, then come back to a position that's about 6 inches outside of her space envelope. And then I'll allow her to close it as she feels like doing. And that way that I feel it's probably not so offensive. The Latins from Latin America really destroy my space envelope. They get in there awfully close, and I've had to work on that over the years as I met Latins to not misunderstand. That's just a pattern. It's beautiful for them. It's just that I have to make the adjustment. And the Asian culture, it's probably wider than that. Just pass that on as a piece of information, and it will affect your communication. How do you respond in the space envelope? Well, today we have looked at a variety of issues. I don't know if it'll read through all the way with so many overlays on it or not. We did look at being a sender. We didn't touch very much on being a receiver, except that the feedback, there's another whole presentation on being a receiver, was mostly on the sender's aspect. And I think you can see very clearly that these patterns, these factors will affect your communication, won't they? I think we demonstrated several times that they will. Also, you know that in fellowship, that continuing a communication, keeping it strong and effective, being very sensitive to the feedback of your friends in Christ will help you in your fellowship. I think as you share Christ, it's just absolutely essential that you focus primarily over here on the right-hand side. You pray and ask God to give you an understanding so you can see and hear and understand, and that by the power of His Spirit, He'll cause you to have a correct response. And I think your communication will improve in fellowship as well as in evangelism. And so let's close now in prayer. And you might think about some of the issues. If God has prompted you about something that may have been out of order for you that you may still not understand, I think submit it and commit it to God. He said we don't get it because we don't ask. And please, don't let that be the condition for you. You ask even now. Father, we commit the issues of our communication into your hands. We know that it is a sum total person that communicates. It's not just words, it's an event. As we share our life and your word and testimony of what you've done in our lives with other people, I pray that you'll put words in our mouth and meditation in our heart, that we might think your thoughts after you, that you'll recall to our remembrance those things you've said, that simply by the power of your Spirit that you will cause us to have proper attitudes and responses, and that you will give us speech that's always with grace, seasoned with salt, so that we can know how to answer every person that we contact. And as you do these things, Lord, I pray that you'll remind us to praise you and give you the thanks and the glory. In Jesus' name, amen.